kind of hard to believe, but May cotton futures are now 3 ticks higher on the week. That's been a crazy boomerang market. Plus side of unchanged for corn, soybeans, lean hogs, and fat cattle. But winter wheat prices are getting weighed down by rains in the forecast.
Live from the hour of winter's relent via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we welcome Ben Brown, Extension Ag Economist from the University of Missouri. And right after the news, Oliver Slope from Blue Line Futures. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Davis, thank you so much. Yeah,
yes,
great
sir.
Day. Bit of a recovery in corn and soybeans, a big-time recovery in cotton from the losses that we saw earlier this week. I believe it was Tuesday that we had markets limit down in the cotton. And really, the livestock markets didn't trade too bad. Hogs had a really good performance today. Don't know if I want to call it a breakaway move that we've got going in hogs, but we did gap higher. We left the gap open in the April contract. We closed at new contract highs. It does feel like we're getting a bit of an acceleration going in that market. And I mean, you, like 3 weeks ago said something about feels like this nearby contract's going to $100 and it's pointed in that direction solidly now.
I think that was this morning, bro.
Well, I think you said it earlier too, though, didn't you?
Sure. You can remember that if you like.
Was it really just this morning? That was the first time you said it?
I think so. Maybe not.
Man.
I don't know. I say lots of things.
Words. We use lots of words.
Words. It's what we do.
That's right.
Sure I did. Why not? I said it like a year ago. I knew it. I knew it all along.
Too crazy.
Thank you for
Ben
that.
Brown, we have and if we get to everything that we have outlined for the conversation with Ben Brown today.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It's a jam-packed show that we've got coming your way. Plus, we got Oliver coming right up. So let's go ahead and get to the markets.
Let's do. Wheat futures ignored the price strength in the corn and soybean markets, with hard red winter wheat futures posting double-digit losses. The potential for some on and off showers in the southern plains of the U.S. over the next 10 days has erased some of the buying from winter wheat futures. Export sales of wheat in the week ended March 4 totaled 360,500 metric tons. Old crop sales of almost 330,000 metric tons were at the top end of trade expectations. July soft red wheat futures posted a new low for the month and posted the lowest settlement of the month. Still, the new crop soft red market is about 15 cents above support at the February low. July hard red winter wheat, 12.5 cents lower at 610. July soft red slipped 7.75 cents, 635.5. September spring wheat, 6 cents lower, 648.5. Chip?
Yeah, on the old crop wheat buys, Mexico, Japan, Thailand, Vietnam, Ecuador, a good list, especially those first four, really, Mexico, Japan, Thailand, and Vietnam, traditional buyers of U.S. wheat. It was a good week.
Corn export sales in the week ended March 4 totaled nearly 683,000 metric tons. Old crop sales of nearly 396,000 tons were at the low end of trade expectations, with new crop sales of just over 287,000 tons blowing well past the top end of the trade guess. Japan and Mexico were the buyers of the corn for delivery in 21-22. Brazil's supply-side agency, that's CONAB, pushed its estimate of corn production to 108.07 million metric tons, up 2.59 million from last month. May corn futures 4.5 cents higher, 538.5. July corn gained 4 cents, 528.25. December corn closed at 483.5. That's up 3.25. Chip.
CONAB made that adjustment on more acres and a slightly higher yield, even though we're pushing the planting date on about half of the Safrinha corn crop, which is expected to be about 3/4 of all of Brazilian production this year. So half of that Safrinha corn crop is getting it's going to get planted outside of the optimum window. So that seems very optimistic to me, that 108.07 million metric tons.
Soybean export sales in the week ended March 4 totaled nearly 564,000 metric tons. Old crop sales of nearly 351,000 tons were at the top end of trade expectations, and new crop sales of just over 213,000 metric tons in line with trade guesses. CONAB raised its Brazilian bean crop estimate, 1.31 million metric tons. That's up to 135.13 million. That compares to USDA's estimate of 134 million metric tons. May bean futures 3¾ cents higher, 14.13½. July beans gained 5½ cents, 14.01½. November bean futures closed at 12.43¾, up a nickel today.
You know, when you look at the buyer's list for beans in the export sales report, China's at the top of the list with 90,200 metric tons. Okay, that's not enough to trigger a daily export sales report. It's got to be 100,000 metric tons to trigger that daily sales announcement. So it was a... The list of buyers is fairly long, but nobody really stepped in there and made an aggressive buy. But when you look at the new crop purchases, that was fairly impressive. Taiwan, China, Bangladesh, Japan, they're all seeing value in new crop bean prices.
Well, cotton export sales totaled 212,000 running bales for delivery in the current marketing year and 92,200 bales for delivery in 21-22. The old crop sales were just ahead of the four-week average. May cotton 313 points higher on the day, 88.35. December cotton surged to 247 points, 84 and 89. On the livestock side, beef export sales of nearly 21,000 metric tons, 17% above the four-week average. April live cattle, 25 cents lower, 118.52½. June cattle up 70 cents, 119.67½. And March feeders fell 95 cents, 135.25. Pork export sales of 32,400 metric tons down sharply from last week and below the four-week average, but were still good enough to support lean hog prices. April lean hogs, 272.5 higher on the day, 91.50. June hogs scampered a buck 72.5 higher, 99.12½.
Come on, baby.
Come on, baby. Come on, 100.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, when we take a look at the beef export sales, Oliver must have gotten tied up and not able to make contact with us here. But if we take a look at the pork export sales, China and Mexico right at the top. But China's in there at 10,700 metric tons of pork bought in the week ended March 4. Mexico's in at 6,900. Japan's in there at 3,100, South Korea 2,900, Canada 2,800. So it was an impressive week for export sales, and we're off sharply, like almost half of what we were the previous week, Davis. It's crazy.
Did you now? I'm not going to give away any information here, but you know, I was proofreading the ProFarmer newsletter earlier today. There's some spooky stuff going on in China with the pork. They thought they were going to fix it.
Yeah,
they're not fixing it. No, it's exacerbated.
We were talking about that earlier this week a little bit about how the ASF and you know, when we were asked for our black swan predictions last week at when we were doing the Commodity Classic early riser session, it was me and Utterback and Chip Nellinger. They asked about the black swan, and I said, you know what? I think the black swan for 2021 might be a black swan that we had a couple of years ago, and it could be ASF in China and what it does to our total feed demand there. So we'll talk more about it with Ben Brown from Missouri, University of Missouri, coming up next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Delaro Complete. Keep your operation moving forward with Delaro Complete from Bayer.
I ain't as good as I once was. I got a few years on now.
I wonder if he wrote this on his 30th birthday by any chance.
You know, it does make you wonder, doesn't it?
I could really lay it down.
What is it about Nashville and the number 30? Take it easy, you're a young guy.
I don't know. When I was 30, I was about as good as I ever was. So maybe he was a little bit older than that when he wrote this.
I'm a late bloomer.
Are you?
I'd say I peaked about tomorrow.
I was going to say 2 minutes ago.
Thank
it's all
you
downhill
for that.
From now. It's all
I'll
downhill.
Take that. I'll take that.
I peaked about tomorrow. Outstanding. Outstanding. Let's get to the conversation with Ben Brown. He's an Extension Ag economist at the University of Missouri, and he joins us right now. Ben, how are you? It's good to talk with you again.
Yeah, it's great to talk with you too, Chip. Thanks for having me on. I'm doing good. It's a bright and sunny day here, and can't complain about the weather lately anyway. So.
Yeah.
Here, and we got some rain.
Yeah. Here for you is different than the last time we talked. You've got a change in address.
That is correct. I moved about 500, 600 miles west, moved from Columbus, Ohio to Columbia, Missouri.
Yeah.
I'm still doing the same thing, but I got to move a little closer to my folks and the family farm in western
That's
Missouri.
That's outstanding. So, good yep. for you, man. Good for you. It's
Pretty
a good group you're working
yep.
with down there.
Yeah, no, it's been a lot of fun. I'm with the Food and Ag Policy Research Institute uh-huh. here at the University of Missouri plus MU Extension. And actually tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock is when we release our baseline, the FAPRI baseline right. for the year. And it compares similar to USDA's baseline, of course, in terms of the rollout. But so it's a big day for us, big week.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I get to be on your show. Can't complain anyway.
There you go. Love that. FAPRI goes out like 10 years with the baseline projections too, right?
That's correct. Yep. Yeah. That is correct. Yep.
Yeah. It is quite an undertaking. And who would have thought that the Brown boys would get together at the University of Missouri?
Yeah, so I'm sure you're talking about Scott, right?
Yes,
yeah. So I joke all the time that, when I moved to Ohio, people would ask me if I was Scott's boy. And I would respond. I was like, well, it depends on what you're talking about. Well, I was like, Scott, and Scott got kind of irritated. And he said, well, I don't know about father, but how about brother? And so depending on which one you ask, we have a different relationship affiliation depending on which one you ask. So, but yeah.
That's so funny. That is so funny. Oh, that's great. That's great. Hey, we've got some deadlines coming right up. Growers are going to have to make some decisions on risk management, and it's decisions on program participation. It's decisions on crop insurance. I'm sure that the question that you're getting the most, Ben, is what do I do?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. So Monday the 15th is the deadline for crop insurance. It has been for a long time. Everybody's very familiar with that date. But starting last year, we now have a second enrollment deadline on March 15th, and that's our federal commodity program enrollment with the Farm Service Agency for the agriculture risk coverage program and the PLC program for the crop side of the equation. And certainly, we've been lucky in the past. To be truthfully honest, I get a lot of farmers that are really irritated with us that we can't give them a straight answer. And the answer that I can provide to them is, this is how enrollments are supposed to be done. We're signing up on time ahead of the crop year. And in a lot of ways, we know as little information about next year's market prices and next year's yield than we've probably known in 20 or 30 years. It's been a long time since we've actually signed up for these programs on time, at least with mm-hmm. the government. Now, in doing that, it provides a lot of choices to the farmer. And so your question about, what should we be doing or what should I do is the question I get asked by far and away the most often. And, the nice thing is that, crop prices are at points where we're not expecting either program, ARC County or PLC, right. to pay out anything. And that's a good thing. Now, the other side of this coin is when we start thinking about these risk management programs, which risk are we talking about? And just given where market prices are against historical benchmarks and everything, I think for corn and soybeans, at least for me personally, and I give the tilt to the agriculture risk coverage program just because local yields are far more sensitive and volatile than national prices. And so, I give it that swing. Now, there are a couple of factors that change that. If you've got irrigated acres, for instance, you're likely not going to have much volatility on yield, especially in a dry year. So, if you're taking the yield volatility out, you might be more concerned about prices. And certainly if, we have a complete collapse in price for whatever reason, the last couple of years we've had ad hoc programs pick that up and probably make the price component, the national price component, a little less attractive to folks just because, like, when we had the trade situation and market prices collapsed, we had, the market facilitation program payments that came out because everybody was hurting. last year when COVID hit, we had the CFAP payments that came out because everybody was hurting. So again, I think from a risk management standpoint for corn and soybeans, it's the yields that are the biggest risk source here. And so that, you know, that favors the agriculture risk coverage program. So okay. We talk a lot about that, and that would be my answer to any farmer that would ask.
Right, right. But boy, they got to run the numbers. Yep, they've got to run the numbers and figure it out. Yep.
Correct.
Yep. Go ahead. Now, you were going to jump over to crop insurance.
Yeah, I was going to jump to crop insurance really quickly. Probably the biggest thing I'm getting right now is because of the increased volatility of markets in February, and then also just the higher futures prices that we've seen, the highest futures prices we've seen in 7-8 years in February. Premiums are quite a bit higher, in some cases double what many people paid a year ago. So the question I'm getting asked is, okay, how do I cheapen this bill? And thinking about ways to cheapen that. Our analysis would suggest that the harvest price option continues to remain a great source of risk management for farmers. And it certainly provides protection if you're going to do grain marketing strategies. If you're going to market your grain, there's no way I wouldn't suggest to you to not do the harvest price option. But by getting rid of the harvest price option, it does cheapen your bill. So people are asking about that. So I say, yeah. No, don't, I wouldn't recommend that. But there's some possibilities on the unit side. If you've been using optional units for your crop insurance, this might be a year where you look at enterprise units, just from the standpoint that enterprise units represent a bigger area, usually less volatile, and they tend to be a little bit cheaper. So I think there's ways to do this, especially now with some of the area-based products on top of all of this as well. But certainly a lot of people are calling in saying, hey, I just can't justify some of these higher premium costs for, at least what I want to do. And, that seems to be the biggest question I'm getting.
Okay. Ben, isn't there some influence of the government program, the ARC-PLC? Doesn't that have an influence on what you can do with some of the buy-up?
Correct. Correct. So
what is that?
I call them high coverage. Yeah, so I call them high coverage policies.
Okay.
I'm sure they have a technical name, but that's basically what they are. They're higher coverage policies. We've had, there's private products out there that crop insurance companies offer, just privately. Some farmers use these, and they're called, revenue boosters or, what have you. And they're based on individual yields. They're very sensitive to your farm's condition. The one difference between these high coverage options that we now have through the risk management agency and some of those private products is the private products aren't subsidized. And so you tend to get a little bit better of a cost benefit with the new programs offered, these high coverage level policies offered by the government. However, as you mentioned, if you want to do those, you have to choose the price loss coverage program, the PLC program for your commodity program election. And that's where, it gets into a little bit more of the analysis, in terms of, are you interested in using some of those area-based products and thinking about it in terms of a yield risk management policy? So.
Right. Well, the deadline there is Monday, and it feels like once we get to that, we're kind of locked in on acres for 2021. Or, I don't know, Ben, is there a little bit of incentive to move some things around yet?
Yeah, no, we're still getting lots of questions in about acres. And certainly, I think for many of these folks, they've already made their crop insurance decisions. So they're willing to move around and wiggle quite a bit on these. Of course, spring weather always has the biggest influence in terms of what actually gets planted. And, in terms of, where you're at in the country to kind of depends on what you plant first. I know there's places to plant soybeans before corn, some to plant corn before soybeans. But in general, weather has a big impact in terms of how many corn acres get shifted to soybeans or vice versa. So, no, I would maybe push back on that statement, Chip, a little bit. Crop insurance is only one part. I certainly think we have some more wiggle room on acreage.
Excellent. Okay, weather being the number one thing, but we've got some big changes in input prices compared to a year ago. Ben, when we come back, I want to talk about some of that. And Davis will jump in on this because these nitrogen prices have just gone crazy compared to where we were at last fall for the fall applications. We're talking to Ben Brown, University of Missouri, and FAPRI right here on AgriTalk. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing today. Chinese soybean meal futures tumbled on ASF, that's African swine fever worries. Brazil to end corn tariff import exemption, that's to encourage farmers there to boost their summer corn acres for next year. Russia could ask fertilizer producers to fix prices for spring grain sowing campaign. Reagan has been confirmed to head the EPA. Reuters is reporting that the EPA is considering combining 2021 and 2022 biofuel blending proposals. Garland has been confirmed as the Attorney General. 1 year ago today, the World Health Organization declared the COVID-19 outbreak was a pandemic, and China's premier defends the 2021 GDP target. Many say China is aiming too low with its 6% GDP.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Bayer Plus Rewards, helping make every part of your season more rewarding.
Doesn't that feel like how segment three should get started, Davis?
It really does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
That is too much fun.
We're into our seventh year now, right? Is that right?
Yes.
Seven?
Our seventh year. Yeah.
Man.
Happy anniversary, brother.
Happy anniversary to you, too. Neither of us have gotten ourselves fired yet. That's awesome.
It's unbelievable. It is absolutely unbelievable that you've lasted as long as you have, Davis.
Right? No one's more surprised than me, homie.
Oh, man. Ben Brown is at the University of Missouri FAPRI. He's our guest. Before we get back to Ben, let's go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Chip, July, hard red winter wheat, 12.5 cents lower, 6.10. July, soft red, down 7.75 cents, 6.35 1/2. May corn futures 4.5 cents higher, 5.38 1/2. December corn closed at 4.83 1/2. That's up 3.25 cents. May soybean futures 3.75 cents higher, 14.13 1/2. Novi bean futures closed at 12.43 3/4. That's up a nickel. Look out, May cotton 313 points higher, 88.35. April live cattle 25 cents lower, 118.52 1/2. March feeders fell 95 cents to 135.25, and April lean hog futures $2.72 1/2 higher, 91.50. There's your quick market recap. Back to you.
All right, thank you very much, Davis. Ben Brown, University of Missouri, is our guest today. Ben, at the end of the last segment, we were just talking about the acreage mix and whether or not those acres are locked in. You don't think they are. I would agree. I feel like the markets can still have a say in how many acres are going to go to corn, how many acres are going to go to beans. But, Ben, these input prices, all of the sudden, the fertilizer price, I shouldn't say all of the sudden. Davis has been talking about it for, I don't know, at least
a couple of weeks.
Couple of weeks. Yeah.
Well, so, let me throw some perspective on that. Yeah. Ben,
okay.
I'm looking at USDA's fertilizer report here for Tuesday, March 9. So this is 2 days old. Over the 2 week period, they do every other week. Anhydrous ammonia up $89.45 to an average in the state of Iowa, $636.25. The range goes from $5.15 a ton to $7.20 per ton. And we're seeing those kinds of increases across the fertilizer spectrum. Ben?
Yeah. Yeah. So, Ben, that's got to be having guys second guessing or giving another thought to their corn acres, right?
Yeah, so and I guess I was going to say that we've seen these increases in input costs really across the board. We've seen it in chemicals as well, you know, when we look at some product mixes. But on the fertilizer side, yes, absolutely. For the folks that haven't either applied some of their anhydrous or they haven't locked it in, certainly, you know, they're sitting there trying to pencil out, okay, acreage-wise, you know, which crop maybe returns me the most. The one interesting thing, and about every farmer I talk to, I ask several, let's say provocative questions, just because I'm curious what's going through their mind.
Yeah.
You know, and I ask these questions about acreage, and And sometimes they smile at me and they say, well, I love to harvest corn, and so therefore I'm going to plant corn no matter what, as long as it's profitable. So when we look at these input prices, you know, certainly it has a bigger impact on the corn picture than soybeans, just the amount of, you know, product we use. And as a result, we've seen some of the, you know, at least in places around the Corn Belt, you know, we've seen arguably the largest incentive to plant soybeans over corn that we've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
yet people still intend to plant corn. And I guess this would bring me, you know, we get planting intentions from USDA at the end of the month. USDA has been surveying farmers the last 2 weeks, and we'll get those planting intentions the last day of this month. This is the type of year, Chip, where historically we've seen big differences between what USDA reports at the end of March and what's actually reported in June as a
yeah.
final acreage number, just from the standpoint that both crops are competitively priced, and we've seen major changes in terms of the returns of value between the two crops in the last 3 months. So things are changing rapidly. So I look for a number in June that looks a little different than what we get here at the end of the month.
Okay, so once we get the prospective plantings report, use the estimates that we get, but don't lock them in quite yet. Can USDA, well, the markets, can the markets influence the acreage at this point? What I'm saying is, it feels to me like USDA missed an opportunity in the reports earlier this week to increase those export estimates and kind of send a shock message to the markets that, hey, some analysts out there are working with unbelievably low carryover projections on soybeans in particular. It feels like maybe we needed to shock the market in one way or another and try to bring some more attention to the need for more bean acres.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with that. I look for the soybean complex to remain tight for the next 18 months, to, you know, 2 years, basically.
Yeah.
Just from the standpoint that I just don't see us getting the needed acres in soybeans to, you know, to really bring us back down. Now, granted, wilder things have happened, but certainly,
sure.
you know, the market for soybeans is very supportive. Now, you mentioned, I believe it was in the previous segment just a few minutes ago, about the ASF concerns in China.
Yeah.
You know, with the delay of Brazilian soybeans getting to China due to the late harvest in Brazil and then just the transport time to China, you know, a lot of soybean meal processors have taken time to clean, do maintenance. And as a result of that, we usually should see soybean meal prices increase, but they remain soft to level, signaling that, you know, maybe there, you know, there's not the demand there. We've seen nearby hog futures in China drop as people are taking their hogs to market, trying to beat the ASF. And we've seen future
yep.
hog prices, deferred months, increase. That all signals that there's some risk with China's
yep.
hog production and need for soybeans. And I think that's something to be watchful of. It's, you know, not something that's detrimental right now, but something to be very concerned. And certainly things are heading in the wrong direction, at least if you're a soybean
yeah.
farmer. If you're a pork farmer, things are good. But,
right.
you know, soybeans, at least in the wrong direction. So yes, I do think the markets have more work to do. I maybe was not surprised that USDA did not move the export targets in March, mostly from the standpoint that, I think there's a possibility of lots of contracts being rolled different marketing years.
Sure.
Now, Grant, we've shipped a lot of soybeans and we've shipped a record amount of corn to this point, but we still have more corn sales that we need. And I think some of these soybean sales could get rolled to a new marketing year. So I think USDA is watching that. The big telltale sign is when we get the second quarter ending stocks numbers at the end of this month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if those come in low, which would match market analyst expectations, look for USDA to make revisions on exports in the April WASDE mm-hmm. report.
Okay. Okay. Do we build? Yeah, I think we do, but I think producers have got to build those expectations of higher export estimates, lower carryover estimates. You got to build those into your marketing plans. And it, to me, that just means more incentive to maintain flexibility on your new crop marketing strategies. You can lock in some prices, build a price floor, but whatever you do, you've got to maintain the upside price potential on those new crop contracts, don't you, Ben?
Yeah, no, and certainly we were talking about crop insurance in the segment before this. Looking at market prices today, where they closed versus those projected prices that we set in February, right? We're already above that, somewhere, you know, 25 cents above that for corn and 55, 60 cents above that for beans. So there's already some revenue out there that's not being protected by those crop insurance products, right? So like, you know, that's revenue that can be, you know, we've got to figure out how to grab that, you know, set a minimum. Yep. And, you know, options prices, you know, help with that as well. Now, the interesting thing, and I don't know if we'll get to this, but the CFTC is increasing speculative limits on Monday as well. All else equal, that'll make the volatility of prices increase, and increased price volatility increases options prices.
Yes.
So, you know, in past, to capture some of this upside revenue potential, you know, we've used call options to, you know, if the market goes up, we can ride the market up. And if it goes down, we've got our call option to protect us. That changes. That scenario kind of changes if now all of a sudden those calls are becoming more expensive. We can still use them, but they just become more expensive.
Right.
So again, I think farmers need to be doing whatever they can to preserve the revenue that's available to them, but then also maintain opportunities for upside potential, especially in the bean market where we could get really tight this summer. Local soybean processors happen to, you know, increase basis bids to bring in some of those soybeans. If you're a producer and you've made early planting soybeans, or, you know, you've got a soybean variety that you can harvest early, you know, there might be potential for a premium with that early harvest, just because the processors are needing it in traditional months where we see some maintenance, soybean processors having maintenance done in August and September. So
right. So position limits, we've talked about it on the show before, but I want to make sure that everybody knows it's coming. On Monday, position limits for the specs increases from 33,000 contracts of corn to 57,800. Soybeans, 12,000 up to 19,300. Wheat, 15,000 contracts up to 27,300. That's the SRW market. Ben, I think you're spot on. It adds to the volatility, and just it's going to give funds even more leverage than what they've got.
Correct. Yeah, and especially with the amount of money that we have, you know, flowing around in the economy, right? I'm not trying to blame amateur traders by any means, but certainly people have got money, and they're sitting there saying, I didn't plan on this. I have money now. I might try to make some money in the futures market. And so as a result of that, we see more people entering that, you know, may not be, I call them ins and outs, right? They're not in for
or
anything. They're just in and out, and that affects our prices.
Ben, we're out of time. Thank you so much. That's Ben Brown, University of Missouri.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back. I'm Chip. Got Davis with me.
Got a text.
Okay.
We were talking fertilizers, and it's one thing to sort of have USDA's numbers, you know, mm-hmm. whatever. Mm-hmm. This is from Iowa. Mm-hmm. Dealer told me today, you ready for this?
Yeah.
$7.50 per ton for anhydrous and no bid on dry product.
No bid.
No bid at all.
So, nope. In other words, they don't know if they're going to have it.
They don't know if they're going to have it. They don't know what it's going to cost. They don't know when they're going to get it. Is what it sounds like to me.
Right.
This is no good.
No. You know, this gets back to conversations that you and I had in the early days of the inputs monitor.
Yeah.
When we were talking about, have that conversation with your supplier. Make sure that they understand what your needs are. Even if you don't mm-hmm. book it today, they need to understand what your needs are going to be. And I believe, Davis, I don't know, man. This feels real iffy.
It really does. And it may just completely blow the whole, well, we'll just stick with the rotation. You know, for those folks who haven't, you know, like Ben was saying, who haven't either A, already applied, which are the winners here, or at least have it pre-booked. At least have it, you know, have it booked. Because, you know, I mean, dude, but even then, I mean, if you don't have your UAN locked in for side dress,
right?
We're up $45 in Iowa the last 2 weeks. What's Illinois look like here? Let's see, 28% up 1280. Okay, so now Illinois is not quite reflecting those same price increases. In fact, this just came out just now.
Okay.
They've got 28% at 262.50 in Illinois. And what did I say Iowa was? Let's see. Oh, they're doing 32% there at 339.
Oh, okay. You know, one of the things though, with the river opening up, and it is opening up, boy, that'd be nice if we could start to bring some product up the river and relax some of the tight supply situation that we've got out there.
Yeah, that'd be that great.
That would be very much helpful. Boy, Ben went to a couple of issues when we're talking about ASF that I think, oh man, Davis, I don't want to say that it's a dead giveaway that ASF in China is worse than what they've led us to believe again.
Okay.
But when you talk about the soybean meal market dumping like it has the last couple of days,
yes.
Corn prices, corn futures coming off of those record highs,
mm-hmm.
And trading lower, and the reports that they're cleaning out or loading out the confinement buildings before those hogs are ready, before they're at market weight, because they want to get them out before they die.
Mm-hmm.
those are the kinds of things that we were hearing at the second stage, the initial outbreak of ASF. Once they realized that, oh, hey, this is serious. This is a big problem with this disease. Then once a barn or a herd, outdoor herd even, once it was infected and they lost a couple, it didn't matter what they weighed. They went to market.
Mm-hmm.
They just absolutely went to market. You loaded them out. If we've got those animals in confinement buildings and they can't keep the ASF out of the confinement buildings,
mm-hmm.
then their biosecurity isn't working.
Well, and what you've done then effectively is concentrate the impact on the national herd there, because now you've got it. Now you've got the disease enclosed with, you know, I don't know if they're shoulder to shoulder in there, the hogs, but I imagine they're in fairly close proximity.
Right. Right. I don't know.
You know, I like this for the pork producer, for the U.S. pork producer.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
It's like Ben said.
Yeah.
Oh.
Not
you know
so
what? Let's go ahead and do this. Should we do this?
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and do this.
Do it.
All right. We don't have a name. All we've got is a title for this caller from Illinois. The title is The Critic.
Oh, boy.
All right. The Critic. What do you got for us?
Hey, this is PJ.
PJ, how you doing,
PJ.
Man?
I'm,
what
I'm
do you got?
Growing older and whiter, Chip. Older and whiter. Not wiser, whiter.
I gotcha. That's with a D, not an S.
Yeah.
Yes.
Say, I've seen this show before, but this is what I consider genuine old style gouging.
Yeah.
Now, I can tell you, I've talked to suppliers here of late, and all of a sudden they haven't got anything to sell.
Yeah.
Now, that problem just came up here all of a sudden. There weren't any real big concerns about any shortages before the end of the year.
Yeah.
Are we going to put that many more acres back in production? Is that where this stuff went?
Well,
I'm not. Phosphorus is a little bit different.
Yeah.
But
right.
In the past, you know, the price is always delivered to product. Is that what we're in for again? They're going to wait too long here. It's going to be too late.
Yeah,
it's coming time.
Yeah, that's exactly right, PJ. And it, we've made this comment many times, and I know that you know this, but boy, the fertilizer prices are sure quick to follow corn to the upside. But once they get up there, they're stubborn to follow it back to the downside. And it feels like
years ago when corn spiked, fertilizer prices never really started coming down until people said, you know what? I'm not getting any return back on what I'm putting on here. I'm going to cut back.
Yep.
And then
gotcha.
They started to come down. But
yep.
Whoa.
Good call. Good call, PJ. Good call.
Thanks,
buddy.
PJ.
Thank you so much.
Yep.
But we got to wrap this up. For Davis and for producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, thanks for listening today. Tomorrow morning, we got a free-for-all going. Wiesmeyer Haney and Tyne Morgan. Tomorrow afternoon, Chris Swift from Swift Trading Company right here on AgriTalk.